Hello and welcome to Talking Therapies, a podcast made together with Psychology's Magazine and the UK Council for Psychotherapy. I'm Susie Walker and I'm the Editor-in-Chief at Psychology's. In this episode, we'll be delving into the world of social media. If you can't tear yourself away from your tablet or you regularly glued to your phone, then this is a podcast for you.
So you get Facebook notifications or even emails, and it's something new coming into your inbox that has something to do with you, which is kind of like social crack. You know, kind of we really, really are attracted and addicted to that kind of attention.
That was the wonderful Dr. Erin Bailick. Erin is an author, international speaker, and psychotherapist whose expertise in social media and technology has seen him become a media expert for the likes of the BBC. Shortly, Erin will be talking to Sarah Niblock, the CEO of UKCP, about the effects our modern lives are having on our mental health. But first, here's some comments about social media from people we spoke to on the street.
I like it more for news and all that kind of instant information. It's great for that.
Do I think it's addictive? Yes. Some people just sit there like, you know, zombies staring at it all the time. And then some people feel very devalued, I think, when they don't get likes.
When you look on social media accounts, you can often find yourself comparing yourself to other people, and often people only portray what they want you to see.
I think too much of anything's not good, and especially I find it more with children. And my grandson, he's permanently on tablets, and it's just trying to get that fine line.
Recent figures have highlighted that people in their 20s and 30s check social media on average 157 times per day. While over half of Britain's 50 million internet users are said to be addicted to surfing the web. So let's find out what impact social media is really having on our lives.
Erin, the world is moving at such a fast pace. What impact is that having in our lives?
It's actually having a really massive impact, and that impact is coming from two major areas, I think, anyway. Social media that we're all familiar with, but also the way that we get our social media. So social media was a different thing when you had to travel to your office to see your computer and go home to open up your laptop, and there was the space in between. But the development of the smartphone over the past decade or so has really kind of made this, I actually hate the expression, but a kind of perfect storm of social media and mobile smart technology that has really got us in a big trap.
I mean, you see it on the streets, don't you? People are just glued to their phones. On the train home, people can't leave work behind. What are the dangers of that?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes when I walk down the streets these days, I think of, you know, Dawn of the Dead or those zombie movies where people are just sort of walking and not paying attention. And there is, you know, there's some real physical danger in that sense that people can't really multitask very well. So if they're checking their Facebook while they're walking down the street, it's not a brilliant move. On the tube, I think it's a different story. I think there's probably nothing more unnatural than being cramped underground with thousands of people traveling at 40 miles an hour. So distracting yourself with Bejeweled or some music or a podcast, I think is an adaptive, appropriate thing to be doing.
But with me, I'm just thinking, oh, I wonder if there's another email that's come in. You know, yeah. If I just look again, then at the end of the day, I'll sleep a little better. I'll feel better if I just have one last glance. Is that healthy or perhaps the
opposite? Well, I bet you're not sleeping that much better if you have that one last glance. I think the big problem that you're thinking about here is what I call our passive relationship to technology. So in a sense, the technology is set at a sort of default level and we passively respond to it. When we get notifications, when we get emails on our phone, and it's not good for us because we're not making active decisions about when we're engaging with it. We're doing what the developers intended than what we intended to do. And I think that does have a pretty deleterious effect on, definitely on sleep because of the blue screen that sort of stops your melatonin from kicking in. But also that sort of rather addictive behavior of checking those notifications every time they pop up.
So aside from sleep, mm-hmm. taking longer to get off to sleep, this compulsion to check for notifications, what should I be looking for in myself to work out whether I've got some kind of problem with social media?
Yeah, I mean, I would deign to say that most of us have some kind of problem with social media or with checking, and that's a matter of how distracted we are all the time. I mean, I'd be curious to do a poll of people listening to the podcast and ask them the last time, you know, they engaged with a really fat book of fiction and didn't check their phone between two or three pages of reading. You know, it's hard, it's really hard just to sit down, even to watch a television program, you know, which is highly stimulating without checking. Now, I imagine what the draw is here, if you kind of imagine a Venn diagram in your mind, you know, two circles overlapping, and in one of those circles is novelty, which is something that we really like, something new coming up. It's why we like, not all of us, but why people like fruit machines and that sort of thing, because the new thing's going to, you know, are we going to win this time? And the second circle is about me. Yeah, so we all like things that are about us. And where they overlap, it's novelty about me. Yeah, so you get Facebook notifications or even emails, and it's something new coming into your inbox that has something to do with you, which is kind of like social crack. You know, kind of we really, really are attracted and addicted to that kind of attention.
The statistic that we heard earlier, that millennials, these people in their 20s and 30s, 157 checks of their smartphones each day. Do we need to take a digital detox? Should I switch off my phone? And if so, for how long?
Yeah, well, see, we're back to this active and passive relationship to technology, which I think is so important. And I think people need to be much more active about their responses to the technology that they have. It's not just millennials. I'm 45 years old. I would be surprised if I didn't check my phone nearly that much. And I'm someone who's trying to be conscious about it. So, you know, I'm not always the best behaved person in relation to that. But, you know, you asked a question before about how do I know, you know, how would I know if it's a problem for me? And that's where insight comes really in handy, because if you're scrolling through, you know, 1,000 pictures on Instagram, or swiping through left or right a bunch of people on Tinder, and you really think about how you feel after that moment, and you really ask yourself honestly, is this making me feel good or not? Am I feeling frustrated? Am I feeling anxious? Am I feeling hollow or hollowed out? Then we need to respond to those feelings. And not enough of us are asking those questions and then following on to make really important decisions about what we're doing with our phones. So I think digital detox is a good idea, but it's also a little bit like dry January. You know, if you don't drink in January, but then you binge in February, what's the overall good? Now, you might be demonstrating to yourself that I can go for a month without drinking, but it might be better to demonstrate to yourself that you can go three nights in a row without drinking and drink moderately on the other nights, and maybe have a, you know, wild night out every once in a while, you know, something kind of a kind of sensible relationship to alcohol. And I think, you know, turning detoxing for several hours during the day, or turning the phone off a couple hours before you go to bed, and having that as a regular part of your life rather than having to go, you know, to the jungle for a week to get it through your system. I think they can both work, but I think when you come back from your detox, you need to be doing regular detoxes as well.
I mean, I know from me and social media that I sometimes quite like the control it gives me in being able to project a particular, to frame, to write my own story, to create my own identity on social media. And that can actually be quite, I feel quite protected and quite empowered by that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've seen movements like Me Too and others. I'm just interested in that. Is there necessarily something harmful in having that shield, that place to project yourself in a way where you may not have control in other parts of your life?
Well, I think control is a big issue here, and I wouldn't disagree with you that there is something quite nice about having this kind of virtual space in which to present yourself in a relatively controlled way. You get to control the text that goes out there. You get to control what you're posting, if you're on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or whatever it is, and there's a satisfaction that comes with that. There's also a shadow side to control, which is around our capacity to not be in control, which is generally what happens in real life relationships, right? So the more we get used to controlling our it's funny because I'm going to say controlling our relationships. When we put ourselves out there on social media, it's actually our relationships with other people, because we're never doing it in isolation, are we? We put something out there for someone to respond to. So there's always an implied relationship. So we get used to controlling those relationships. We can not look at people. We can block them. We can dismiss them much more easily if we don't agree with their ideas. We can be siloed in a filter bubble without even being exposed to other people's ideas in some of the social media. Then we plop ourselves in front of a real person, and we have to deal with complexity, conflict, emotional depth, and people get scared because they're used to controlling it. And I think that's potentially quite a big issue. I think more and more, and again, I don't think it's just around younger people, but you find a tendency for people to get in relationships starting online, maybe through WhatsApp or through Tinder or whatever it is, and then ending those relationships with a text message or a messenger message, or I don't know if you've heard of ghosting, where you just disappear, you just stop responding to people's, you know, requests. And that's because it's easier, because you have control over that. You don't have to deal with the emotional mess that you're provoking by telling someone, do you know what, I'm not interested. So while, yes, we all need to have some control over our image and how we show up socially, we also have to have a very deep tolerance for conflict and emotional complexity. And if we're enjoying that control too much, it means we're probably not so good at the other bit, which I think we need to get better at.
You've talked a lot about the negatives, and I wondered whether there is any upside to social media and technology. Are there any ways in which it does improve our lives?
I think there are loads of upsides, and I think it can get very easy to talk about the kind of dystopian vision of where we're going in relation to technology. So first of all, I think that something like Facebook, for example, is really quite good for secondary and tertiary relationships. It's not great for primary relationships. And what I mean for that is, you know, you don't want to communicate with your family and your partners, you know, through Facebook Messenger, or your close friends that you should be going out to the pub or to the theater with. You want to keep that very real. But, you know, who wants to see the people you went to high school with regularly, but you want to know, you might want to know kind of what's going on with them, or cousins that are spread around the world, or people that you knew in college, and you're kind of curious about what's going on, but you don't need to be in a regular relationship. I think it kind of can foster quite a nice secondary and tertiary community of people. I think also, people who might live in small communities or rural communities who are struggling with a variety of different issues. It might be their sexuality, it might be gender identity, it might be their cultural background, it might be their interests, you know, their interests in music or art, or they could be goths or whatever it is, you know. Suddenly you can reach out to communities of people who share that interest who just might not be around, and it can be a real growth opportunity. You have access to information that we never had access to before. You know, if you're not finding out about it at home, you can find out about it out there in the world. We can be creative and share that creativity. Instagram, used, you know, wisely in a sense, is a great way to share a creative activity that's much wider than text. The direction we're going in virtual reality, I mean, who knows, all sorts of freaky stuff is coming up in the future, but imagine, you know, what you could create artistically and three-dimensionally and explore parts of your psyche in ways that you haven't been able to do. So there's a lot of good around now and a lot of potential too.
That was psychotherapist Erin Balick speaking with Sarah Niblock, the CEO of the UK Council for Psychotherapy. So after listening to that, you feel that you could benefit from talking time with a psychotherapist, then go to the Find a Therapist section of the UKCP website and have a look through. The website address is www.psychotherapy.org.uk, and look for the Find a Therapist tab. We're also featuring the subject of social media in the Psychologies magazine this month, or you can find us online, psychologies.co.uk. We'll be doing a podcast each month for the next year with some of the UKCP's psychotherapists, so join us again next month. Till then, thank you for listening and take good care of yourselves.